Welcome to Bittersweet Symphony, a podcast about the bitter, the sweet, and the bittersweet of life for musicians when the music stopped and the audiences vanished. I'm violinist Cliona Ryan, a member of the Irish Chamber Orchestra and a freelancer. And in this episode, I'm chatting to a fellow ICO violinist, Louis Roden. Louis shares his sweet memories of time with family and with his wife, gardening in his allotment. The bitter experience of a positive case in the orchestra resulted in the immediate cancellation of ICO projects, as well as the cancellation of a world premiere by Paul Frost. His bittersweet memory is of the orchestra's first concert back. Through the sweetness of performing together and the music, there was a letting go of tears in many of the audience members. We also have the usual background bashing and barking, to be expected when Zooming. This is Louis Roden.
It's funny because for me, remembering back to lockdown one seems like such a long time ago. And also the emotion of that moment is so different to where I am now, or I would imagine a lot of people are now. When I remember back to the first lockdown, it was so serious. I'll never forget seeing the army trucks in Italy carrying the coffins out of a small village. It was unbelievably emotional. Just the, where have we got to in the world? Like, you know, this is real. I'm looking at it on television. And is this heading our way now? You know, so all of that was one thing. But then throughout all of that time, there were these special moments that were quite precious on a very human level. Nothing to music, nothing to playing the violin. You know, I was thinking back to what were the sweet things, what were the bitter things, what, and there was a lot of sweet things attached to that first lockdown because I had a family and I had enough money to put food on the table. So that was all very nice, but it's hard to remember how awful it was as well. No matter what situation life kicks at you or kicks you into, the human condition is extraordinary at, you know, making the best, whatever happens. We've had that. I've had that experience in my life. And you find a way to manage it. And it's not always easy, but it does go on.
Yeah. You say, Louis, that there were elements of how difficult it was that you had forgotten. And you mentioned that there was a lot of emotion in that first lockdown. What would you say those emotions were?
Well, actually, and I'm not sure if they're all emotions, yeah. But the one of them was certainly the uncertainty of things I found very difficult. You know, how bad is it going to get? Is my family in danger? Was a very prominent one for me. And you would know we have medical issues within my family. And so that element was very strong. And yet I've had to deal with that for my life. But that emotion was certainly there, one of sheer terror and, you know, protection, fight or flight mode, you know, batten down the doors. It was a way of protecting those around me in my home.
Because both your children are at risk.
They would have been counted as high risk.
I can't imagine how difficult that must have been.
Well, but there, you see, this is the thing. Most people who know my circumstances, I'd meet them in the street and they would say things like, my God, this must be so tough for you. But actually, it wasn't. Yes, it was very tough. But how much tougher than everybody else? I'm not sure, because we had dealt with this all along. We had gone through cross-contamination, cross-infection. Masks were nothing new for us. Hand hygiene was always present. It wasn't actually that much tougher for us because we were used to it. But there were moments, particularly in that first month or two, that were pretty tough going.
You said terror. That's a difficult place to be. Maybe you weren't there for that long, you know.
No, I wasn't. And it is a very difficult place. And I've been there a couple of times. But it's amazing when you I think when you have to deal with very difficult situations, you gain an insight into the bigger picture and you're able to take one step back. And once you can do that, you're already in a better place. And that happened to me very quickly. And then we just really managed things. So it actually was okay because of this resilience. It is extraordinary.
Have you been surprised by the amount that you and your family have had?
No, I would have always felt an inner strength. So I wasn't actually searching for this resilience. I kind of knew.
It was there.
Yeah, it's just the initial shock. And once you get over that, then, okay, so how are we going to manage this and what's the best thing to do?
Yeah. Let's go back to January, February 2020 and what your life looked like, kind of a snapshot of where things were.
My January and February at that time would have been, I know from, I don't have to remember it, it's always really busy. Lots of things going on.
And then March 12th happens.
I know. I can't remember, was there an announcement to say that Leo Varadkar was going to make an announcement from Washington? But I remember sitting in the sitting room waiting for the speech to come on. And it was like, you know, Churchill declaring war or whatever, and all the, you know, people listening to their radios in 1939. But that's exactly what it felt like.
Would it be Friday nights that he would talk to us? I do remember that sense of gathering, listening, needing that kind of reassurance. It was actually quite extraordinary, that, wasn't it?
It was.
Did you go to Lidl and ransack the place?
No, I went to Fallon. I went to Fallon and Byrne and said, "What? You've no camembert? No 12-month-old camembert? Do you realise that this is a pandemic?" No. Do you know what I do remember, though? I remember we were meant to perform on the Late Late Show on the Friday night. And actually, we were rehearsing for something that week in Limerick. And then suddenly, everything fell apart. And that's where I was on those last 2 days. But I do remember stocking up a bit, not on toilet rolls and... what was the other thing that people bought? I can't remember. Bread.
Yeah, bread and toilet roll. I hope they never confused the two, you know, in the use.
Yeah. I love those double quilted Andrex sandwiches. It's kind of, when you asked me about sweet, bitter and bittersweet, that was one of the things, the cooking, shopping, having good food, nice wine, whatever. That was kind of my sweet thing. I've a couple, because it took me a few, you know, there are a few different things. But one of them was definitely kind of back to the basic of human life, which is nutrition, sleep and exercise. And that was my sweet thing. Along with, as you probably know, we have a vegetable allotment. And on 2 days before the lockdown, I ordered, I can't remember how many tons of topsoil and big timber, bigger than sleepers, to make vegetable beds. And Monica and myself went down there almost every day because we were allowed, because we were doing it to provide food. I'm not sure if the government had us in mind when they said anybody involved in food production, but because the cops did stop us one day and said, where are you going? And I said, we're going down because we've vegetable allotment, we're involved in food production. He said, for who? I said, for us. And he said, is that important? I said, it is for us. So we did go down every day, gardened, put the vegetables in place and grew all our own, and then harvested throughout various lockdowns. We're still harvesting.
And you say about that trinity of the nutrition, the sleep and the exercise and looking after your soul. And the thing with the garden is I get the sense from you that it both gave you the food and the nutrition, but it also gave you soul food.
It did, because there's something very special. I think most people who do any form of growing or gardening or looking after anything that grows, there is a feeling about dealing with the earth. But it's because we need it to grow. But there's also, because that connection with how things develop using just sun, water and the earth, that's a very special thing, you know, it goes right back to basics of people growing food to look after themselves. But there is definitely a connection. I think I see it with people involved in growing vines in France. It's that kind of soul food that you get from it.
It's love, it's gentleness, it's tenderness. It is love, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And also, we did it together. Like, Monica and myself went down because, otherwise we were just sitting at home.
What did it mean to you to do it together?
Well, we would never have spent that kind of time together. We were always too busy and, you know, raising kids, running around, doing jobs and careers and all kinds of travel. One of us was nearly always away while the other one was trying to hold things together. But it was just a very special time. Yeah, it was lovely.
Did you have different types of conversations in that context?
I don't think we had an awful lot of conversation at all.
Really?
I think that was one of the funny things. It was lovely, but it was very just quiet, inner strength time. It was just, that's, I think, who we are. We're just, I know there's a lot of, you know, laughing and joking and everything, but there is a strength, that there's an inner strength where we just get on with this.
And you say we. That strength, you give each other that, do you think?
I actually don't know about that. I feel it comes from within.
In both of you, you both hold that.
Yeah. I think so.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it's always been there. I think it's something you develop as a child or, you know, upbringing or whatever. I don't know what it comes from. But I don't think we feed off each other for it. We'd certainly feed off each other to make the decision.
Yeah.
But the inner strength is, you know, something else, I think.
Yeah, it's inherent in both of you. Mm. Your sweet memories are around the allotment and gardening together.
Yeah. And there was one other one.
Yeah.
And this is, again, I had to really reflect on the time because I don't feel this now.
Okay.
So we were locked out on March, April, May, June, July. And then Olga Barry was trying to salvage whatever she could out of Kilkenny Arts Festival. And it became apparent that we could play an outdoor concert for 100 people.
50.
Was it even that small? But it was going to be outdoor. I drove down to the first rehearsal. And Jerry was standing outside the door. And it was just extraordinary. It was like I had just crossed the finish line of a marathon. We had achieved something extraordinary just by being there. And then, you know, we went on and did the concert, which actually became my bittersweet thing. We had all of that build up and there was a lot of nervousness about the rehearsal and complying with regulations, making sure, is this allowed? You know, and everybody was really feeling in the dark as best they could. And then we managed to arrive and managed to get through the rehearsals. And Catherine was doing the Piazzolla Four Seasons, Piazzolla and Vivaldi. And then we got to the concert. I remember we all filed out 2 meters apart. It was like the army, you know. The audience were already in place, sitting in kind of groups, little pods of, a lot of them were just in twos. And we walked out on the stage and I looked down and I saw, I'd say 10% of the audience were in tears. They were actually tears streaming down. And I looked around and there were quite a number of the orchestra in tears as well. It was extraordinary. And I thought, oh my God, it's so brilliant to be here. And yet this is what we're left with. Audiences and the musicians in tears. And it brought it all home. You know, it was a fantastic achievement. And the concert, I think, was great. And there was a buzz to it that was amazing. And yet there was this sadness. It was a palpable sadness amongst the whole presence of the people. Like it was on both sides of the stage and the audience. That was hard as well as being fantastic. Again, because we didn't know what's the future.
Yeah.
A lot of people didn't have what I had as the nice things during the first lockdown. They didn't have two children to try and protect, which actually sounds like a difficulty, but in fact sometimes it's a distraction. And then there were a lot of older people who were completely isolated. It was just the vulnerability of, well, there's nothing wrong with vulnerability, but it was when it was so present, and a lot of very scared, vulnerable people around, and without any clear picture for the future.
I remember that performance. You're right. It was a combination of so many different emotions. There was some kind of aching relief, like a letting go that hurt. What was it like thinking about your bitter memories?
I don't have a lot. Do you know that? I don't know if it's the same thing again about resilience and the human condition and forgetting how bad it was.
Mm-hmm.
But the one that kept on coming back was April just gone. We all came in for the first rehearsal. We had the PCR tests and so on. And the next day we had a positive case. And then Jerry came in and said, look, everybody has to leave the building.
Yeah.
So we were all sitting outside, but we were doing a patch of work. And one of the works is that minimalist American composer.
Philip Glass.
Yeah. Thank you. Philip Glass. And we were also doing a work, a new, brand new work by Paul Frost, who we would all know as a colleague. And he was coming down on that very afternoon. The next thing is Jerry came back and said, look, we're calling this off. And I happened to be beside Catherine, who was directing the whole thing. And obviously had, taken over a huge amount of work in those few months from people who had to cancel out because they couldn't travel. And I could feel her whole world just crumbled at that moment. And at that moment that I could feel Catherine's world fall apart, I looked over and I saw Paul Frost and Mia walking up the hill towards us for the first rehearsal. So we were all deemed close contacts. And it just felt like, this is shit. So that was pretty awful. And then 9 days later, we were meant to start our next patch. And of course, that had to be cancelled too because the quarantine is 10 days. So it just felt like somebody was having a bit of a laugh at our expense,
Low point.
Yeah, not great at the time.
Was there any part of you that felt relieved because it could have been a bad situation?
Yes. When it came to it, that was the right decision. We did the right thing. So yes, I was relieved. I was.
Louis, can I ask actually, I remember for me a really huge moment was when that needle went to my arm. And I wonder how that was for ye and your family. I mean, I was in bits. I was in tears.
Well, interesting. I don't know if, again, it's my history with all medicine and so on and my children's. But I just thought, get on with it. Great. Bring it on. I was delighted, but I didn't have any huge emotion attached to it, even though this is probably the most important thing that happened during lockdown.
You were already just kind of doing it though, weren't you? You were just so in that mode.
Yeah, I thought, yeah, great. Onwards.
I wonder, everything stopped for you in March and you started, well, you've described such a joy and a sweetness in the kind of simplicity of nourishment, exercise, growing, family, protection, care. And I wonder, going forward, what you're bringing with you from this time?
Oh, I think everybody will be bringing something with them. It'll be like, I would imagine, I remember my parents speaking about during the war, the shortage of petrol, and we were all on bikes and we couldn't get sugar and, we were all afraid of being called up and all this stuff. And I was like looking at them thinking, yeah, but sure, that's 100 years ago. And we'll be the same. We'll be saying, oh, you've no idea, during the pandemic, you could only walk 2 kilometres around your house. And they'll all be looking at us with two heads. But I think if anything, it's seize the moment. Live in the present. Forget about, the past and the future. It's not that the past didn't happen. It's just you can do nothing about that, nor can you do anything about the future. So you really need to live, every day. And I will be thankful of things, I think, more than I was before. Simple things like being able to travel, being able to go to a restaurant. They were probably the two things that I missed most. I will always appreciate the freedom that we have when a bit more of normality is back. To actually think back of, you're only allowed within 2K of your house. Like, even now I find that slightly funny. Like thinking, was that real? Or because I've barely a memory of that. Because it's all gone. It's past.
So there's a desire to continue to be in the present, and then a gratitude and thankfulness.
Yeah, and I have a more calm inner strength than I had before, maybe. And maybe that's, you get a bit battered through these times and then you come out the other end and you're a little bit saner and a little bit, maybe have slightly more wisdom.
Thanks to Louis for sharing with us. That sense of honing in on what mattered and getting right back to the basics of nutrition, sleep and exercise, that really chimed with me. I can also imagine that quiet and connected companionship between Louis and Monica as they gardened and grew together, nourishing body, soul, and their relationship. Thanks to you for listening, supporting, and sharing the podcast. I do believe that courageous communication and openness is a positive and powerful thing. You help by sharing this podcast and by talking about it and all that it brings up for you. Thanks again, and until next time.
Hi, it's me again. You thought it was over, but it's not. I actually realised that this is the second last episode of Bittersweet Symphony. I mean, I knew it, but I didn't acknowledge it with myself. I want to talk to all of you that have listened, that have supported, and that have shared this podcast. Creating this with my fellow musicians has given me solace, comfort, joy, and connection. It began for me in August 2021. So this podcast has been a significant part of my life for almost the last year. At this point in time, I would love to hear from all of you that are listening. You're across the globe. You're in Ireland and the UK. You're in America, Brazil, Germany, Austria, Switzerland, France, Vietnam, Korea, Australia. In fact, there are few countries in the world that there hasn't been a listener for at least one or two episodes of the podcast. What I'd love to know is, do you want to hear more? And if so, what do you want to hear? There are many more bitter, sweet, and bittersweet aspects of our lives as human beings and as musicians that we have yet to explore, to examine, to reflect on together. So what would you like to hear about? I want to know. You can connect with me in any way you'd like, whatever works for you. Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, good old-fashioned email. It would mean a lot to me to hear from you and for us to consider what comes next, if anything, and to consider that together. Thank you for listening, and until the next and last time for this season of Bittersweet Symphony.